fucking chicks. Pop rock on the ground.
Don't ask me what that was, but it was some kind of musical number. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. You're on the air with the Out of Breath, Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides. In the studio with me is attorney Jonathan Gettleman. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Robert.
So what you need to do is pull that mic close to you and be about like an inch or two away.
All right.
The best you can.
Work it here.
And, of course, what we're going to do here, since Jonathan is under some time constraints, and We've been kind of just missing each other. I'm going to the 7-Eleven. He's going to the studio. Ah, dear. But we made it anyway. We ran into each other.
Sure did.
We're talking about today something we began to talk about on Sunday by listening to an interview with Anna Richardson. Today I'm going to be playing an interview with Miguel de Leon. These are two homeless folks who are the proud recipients of 60, count them, or more, infraction citations by the Santa Cruz Police Department, perhaps by Parks and Rec. I'm not sure.
No, just typically the city.
That's the city.
But typically SCPD. Just police.
Just mm-hmm. the police. Because mm-hmm. I know Chief Ranger Wallace has been very active in giving out sleeping tickets, I hear. So he also has been involved in that. In fact, recently we got Councilmember Catherine Byers to agree to get those tickets added into the monthly ticketing record so we know actually how many citations are issued each month under the sleeping ban, which is a law, municipal code that's been on the books since 1978, which criminalizes sleeping outside or in a vehicle or in any structure not intended for human habitation. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Sound right to me.
All right. Now, you're a...
Could I just make a quick... point on your 60 citation issue?
At any point.
Okay. Well, then all I just wanted to say about that was, while they've been issued 60 citations, the prosecutor's office hasn't necessarily chosen to prosecute 60 citations. I looked on the open access program that the court has for open and closed cases, and it looks like Anna has about 3 outstanding citations, maybe 4. She's been, Mark Briscoe and I were able to beat a resisting arrest citation that she had, and she's been convicted of about 2. So while she's been issued a lot of citations, she hasn't necessarily been convicted of a lot of citations.
Good point. And that, of course, is why they're trying to get an injunction. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Jonathan and Robert. What's your name?
Hey, Robert, Ed Fry.
Oh, hi, Ed.
Hi.
Did you, in fact, meet with Jonathan the other day?
What's the music there?
What's the music?
Yeah, I can't. Oh, we got. I can hardly hear you because there's music going on with that.
So let me make sure that I haven't. I'm having a little problem here. You're dealing with an amateur as far as studio stuff. Because let's see, now does this help at all?
Oh, yeah, that does it.
Oh, good.
Okay. Might have to start over there. Robert.
Yeah, Now, were you listening on the radio and you heard a lot of musical interference or just on the phone?
No, just on the telephone. I can't get the radio out here in SoCal.
Oh, good. Well, I hope it wasn't on the radio. Anyway, you know who Jonathan Gettleman is?
I just met him this afternoon and we had a wonderful talk, yeah.
Well, Ed, I know that you yourself have been a defender of homeless folks at different points in your career. You're an attorney, you're an activist in your own right, and you are going to actually talk on another subject on the air. But since we've got two attorneys sort of in the same room, I thought, and I'm interested in the same issue, what are your thoughts on this situation and what comes to mind?
Yeah, rather than talk about that therapy thing, I would rather talk about what Jonathan and you have. Have you already been talking about it a little bit? Have you been on the air for a while?
We've actually just begun. You know what I'm going to suggest you do is call in on a second line, which will actually enable a third person to call and ask you both questions.
Great.
The line you should call in is 469-3112.
112, okay.
469, I'm sorry, no, that's wrong. 469-3119, there we go.
Okay.
All right, then.
So while he's calling back, one thing I'd also like to point out is, at least in their pleading papers, the county has not proven that Miguel and Anna have ever failed to show up in court either. So I'd just like to make that clear for the record. Now, I'm not saying that it's not possible that they've failed at some point to show up, but the city has certainly not shown that.
We have Ed back again. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
So, yeah, and actually for those who don't really know what we're talking about, there was a story in the, I guess it was the Saturday or Friday paper, City Seeks Injunction Against Homeless Couple. For those who are homeless or poor or concerned about the rights of street performers or just maintaining a traditional Santa Cruz situation of diverse dimensions downtown, you may have been aware that there's been an increased police crackdown over the last year or two. The city council voted in an expansion of the so-called downtown ordinances, the forbidden zones, as they're called, as I call them, where it's illegal to sit, spare change, table, or perform. in all business districts, period, on any sidewalk outside of Pacific Avenue and on much of Pacific Avenue. I'd say about 90% of the sidewalk of Pacific Avenue, which is unusually broad, and that's why there is some space left. But the city used an unusual additional tool. They also got a new law that said any three infractions will make a misdemeanor, even though two infractions of almost any crime except sleeping is a misdemeanor now in Santa Cruz. A misdemeanor means you can be jailed. You can face a six-month jail term if you're convicted. You can be arrested custodially and taken into custody and held on bail. Whereas infraction crimes, although in theory you can be arrested, traditionally they're not the basis for an arrest for Santa Cruz police.
Right. And then, so just briefly to introduce myself then.
Please.
I am an attorney who, in representing Ms. Richardson in a resisting arrest case, which she thereafter proved that she, you know, hadn't actually done what they were accusing her of doing. While we were standing in the hallway, she showed me papers that she had been served by that morning, and it turns out that the city is using an additional civil tool against them, which is to try to get injunctions prohibiting them from committing these ordinances. And basically what that would allow the city to do would to set up a situation where they could be held in contempt of court if they were to, say, sleep on the sidewalk any further. And
sleep anywhere in public any further.
Anywhere in public. And the problem with that is that once the court starts to use its equitable powers in civil court, then it has an almost unlimited amount of, you know, punishments that it can hand down, including incarceration. So basically it's turning into the incarceration of general homelessness, because there's no question that people have to sleep somewhere.
Right, and this law that actually they are being charged with is a section of the code which states you can't sleep on any public property. That means even if it's hidden away in the bushes, under the bridges, out of sight completely. You can't sleep on much private property. In fact, you can't even sleep in private structures unless they're a house or hotel, or one of the very rare exceptions, let's say a business parking lot or a church parking lot, in a vehicle with the permission of the church, only two or three vehicles to a parking lot, and gives one other exception too. But it doesn't in any way deal with the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people every night who have no shelter. And I'll correct that. 10% of those people have shelter under the Interface Satellite Shelter Program or the Winter Armory Shelter Program. Ed, you've been kind of following this at all. Any comments?
Not so far. I'm interested in Jonathan's case.
Uh-huh.
It's a really interesting situation, because to try to hold them, you know, to enjoin them with a formal court order, and then thereafter haul them before the court, arrest them because they've allegedly violated this injunction, is just oppressive. It's getting way too heavy-handed, I think, by the city, especially in these hard times. I mean, this is ridiculous. The front page of the New York Times today was had a story involving how many new people are setting up homeless camps all over the country.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Somebody emailed me that story. And also, we have to understand that we're not talking about behaviors that are voluntary. We're talking about sleeping at night after 11 o'clock, which is actually per se a crime in Santa Cruz. And that's something I fought for 20 years, and it seemed to me to be a really pretty prima facie human rights abuse. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, everybody has to sleep. And if you don't have adequate shelter, courts have ruled in the Jones decision in Southern California that became a Jones settlement, although it's no longer precedent, the reasoning is still quite sound, that it's cruel and unusual punishment to arrest someone for sleeping and force them to go to court if there's no shelter being provided, and they really have no reasonable prospects of getting any kind of shelter, because the city's priorities are such as to back up golf courses and luxury hotels and pay for large salaries for CEOs instead of meeting basic human needs.
Right. And Jonathan and I and a couple others were talking this afternoon about the possibility of challenging that sleeping ban.
And indeed, it is being challenged in at least two other cities that I know of. Santa Barbara and the ACLU of Los Angeles is challenging it in Santa Barbara. And then in Sacramento, Attorney Mark Maron
is challenging it. And the city is so concerned about it, they've actually gone into mediation with Marin and offered to set up some kind of, I think they're offering to pay money, usually I think it's federal kickdown money for opening up the fairgrounds, because the Sacramento has its own tent city that has been set up there. But tent city is, of course, springing up in other places, similar to Santa Cruz's Camp Paradise. Jonathan, any thoughts on this?
Well, I guess my thought is that one place that we would like to go with all of this is that if the city is going to have its ordinance, then it seems that they have to provide sufficient shelter space for people to have some means of avoiding criminal sanctions. I mean, it seems pretty clear that you can't set up a situation where people cannot possibly avoid criminal sanction. So if they want to create enough space for people to be able to sleep inside, then, you know, then we can talk about that and we can move in that direction. But to just merely say, you're homeless, you're going to either hide yourself somewhere or go to jail, I don't think that that is humane, let alone legally
sound.
Well,
the question, we know it's not humane. The question is whether you can get the Roberts Supreme Court or even the liberal Ninth Circuit to find in your favor, or even attorneys to get an injunction. I mean, for example, we have tried, those of us in HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, have tried, and Human Rights Organization, another local group, have tried to get together a sleeping ban lawsuit for about 5 years. And we've begun it, we've gotten plaintiffs, we've gotten a couple attorneys interested and involved, but we couldn't quite get to the critical mass that involved seeking, you know, the appropriate legal remedy, even at a time when the Jones precedent, which happened in 2006 in the spring, was effective. And, of course, the Jones precedent is no longer, it's either decertified or depublished. I'm not sure which, you probably know which.
Well, it's depublished, which means that it can't be precedential. It can't be used as authority by the court, but the reasoning could still potentially be used by the court. And so that's what we're trying to push the court towards. One thing, I guess, that was important about the Jones case is it's specifically found in the city of Los Angeles, and this dealt with Skid Row, but if there were no places for people to go to sleep, then the Jones case held that it was cruel and unusual punishment to arrest people.
It wasn't even that. It was more that if they found that generally there were no places to sleep in the city, that an individual didn't even have to go and try and find a place that night. If there were an established shelter shortage, that's what I understand.
So I will couch everything that I'm saying to you, Robert, in that I just recently came into this. It was just by happenstance.
We're going to educate you here,
Jonathan. I picked this case up. So I appreciate you educating me, and to the degree that I can be helpful, I will be helpful.
Thank you, man. Okay. We have a caller. You're on the line with Ed Fry, Jonathan Gittleman, and Robert.
And David Derrick.
And who?
David Derrick.
Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, man? Are we on the air?
You are on the air with these two attorneys, and we don't have a lot of time, so
right, hey, look,
zip it up.
Guys, they're talking about all these people and these court cases and people not being able to sleep and stay awake and all this. I have one thing to say, and that is God gave us the right to be born. He gave us the right to be aware and to be awake. He gave us no right to be unconscious while we're awake. I mean, not unless you're in a meditative state.
But did he give us the right to sleep? Now, come on, there's some who say you should pay good money to be able to sleep. Santa Cruz needs your dollars.
Well, yeah, if I could sit by a parking meter and put a quarter in and then go to sleep in a blanket, that would be cool.
Well, they are attempting to meter the benches. It's now illegal to sit on a bench for more than an hour under the new Matthews-Rotkin rules. Matthews is the mayor, Rotkin is the vice mayor of Santa Cruz, that passed by the city council unanimously. You know.
Yes, and this city council is completely asleep. I'm saying they are awake, but they're unconscious.
Well, maybe we should send the police in to ticket them, except we can't usually find them after 11 o'clock at night, and they're usually in their homes. They have places to go. It's legal to sleep in your home. And which brings me to another issue. David, any final point? I'm going to open the line so other people can call, David.
The final point is that this city, Santa Cruz, along with every other city in the whole United States, and who knows about the whole world and all those other national countries that are our allies or not our allies, but on that point, this city has broken the golden rule, which God gave us all, and that is to sleep.
Well, the golden rule is, she who has the gold makes the rules. Thank you for calling in, Dave.
One more point that I'd like to make real quick, Robert, if you don't mind, is the interesting part about this civil nuisance case is that after the court finds that an ordinance was violated, the court then has to balance whether people in that locality, undetached from the issue, would feel that the actions were actually a nuisance. They caused some harm to society. And so we're going to get beyond whether it's legal or not legal and really get to the heart of the matter, which is substantively, is people sleeping really hurting anybody?
And, of course, the downtown merchants, I'll be a devil's advocate here. As you'll know, I'll be hearing from the city attorney, John Barisoni, or Susan, his wife. It's nice that they both get employment for this kind of work. They'll be telling you, well, the fact of the matter is that sleeping outside is a public health hazard. There are no facilities for urinating and defecating. It's a dangerous to both the people who are sleeping outside and to other people. It creates it's not safe for minors to sleep outside. It's not safe. People in the neighborhood necessarily get upset and anxious when they know that someone's sleeping in their car nearby. There could be many child molesters or violent individuals who are homeless, possibly parole violators, sex molesters. Who knows? This is the kind of stuff that not just hysterical people in the community, but police officers brought up in a discussion of the sleeping ban changes that were considered 10 years ago. We actually did get the sleeping ban changed from a misdemeanor for two offenses to an infraction for two offenses with a fine limited to, well, the wording is $20. With court assessments, it's $97 per citation. At least that's the last time I looked for the crime of sleeping outside.
Well, then they should take the necessary steps to provide the appropriate housing so that people don't have to do that.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. We are not a wealthy community. If you don't have the money to live in Santa Cruz, you should pick up your butt and go somewhere else. If you look at the Sentinel website, there are over 100 comments on the latest Sentinel editorial this morning. You probably read it. I don't know if you read this editorial, which is, I wouldn't say it's a new low in bigotry, but it's your standard Sentinel trash. It's, as we see it, downtown laws take precedence, rights of homeless couple clash with public's right. So the public has a right not to have a couple sleeping under a bridge. It's a really hard sell for me to believe that, but I suppose, you know, they might pee-pee on the bridge and hurt the structure. Again, that's urinating. That's not sleeping. So, the ruling is that, well, you can't catch them urinating. You can't catch them discarding debris. You can't catch them engaging in other crimes, but you can catch them sleeping. Hence, it is an appropriate police tool to have this ordinance.
Well, one thing that I've been interested in, a newcomer to this debate to some degree, is the whole idea that the city council owns public space and that they can basically privatize what is otherwise owned by the public in general, not because you pay taxes necessarily, but because you exist and take up space and are a citizen. And so for a board of a very few people to say that we are going to dictate how people who aren't hurting anyone can or can't use the commons, especially when it comes to throwing people in jail, is kind of shocking. I mean, it defies the basic principles that were set forth by our founding fathers, which is the right to pursue your own happiness. I believe it's Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, if I'm not mistaken.
It could be.
That's the right of privacy.
Right, the right to privacy.
And also, generally the right to pursue happiness, I think, is included. But the right to privacy, the right to be left alone, should come in here too. People have a human dignity requires that people be left alone, and that, like Justice Brandeis said in a famous dissenting opinion back in the 20s, he said that the right that's most highly valued by civilized people is the right to be left alone, the right to privacy. So that's another, the cruel and unusual punishment theory is one constitutional theory. right of privacy is another. There are others as well. But I would like to inject, if I may, just a sense of hope here, especially on the national scene.
Give us hope.
With what's happening. Finally, some national leaders, like Obama himself, the other day started taking up the issue of greed. And
this was at the same time as he was throwing another trillion at the greedy corporations, right?
Yes, but
I love that rhetoric that he does. Yeah,
but
go ahead.
Yes, I know there's a lot of hypocrisy flying left and right. But and then the Republicans are now talking about the importance of trust and trustworthiness and how we've lost the trust of the AIG people. And well, you know, there's a lack of trust everywhere you look, and there's greed wherever you look. And now these ethical questions are now part of the agenda, part of the what we can talk about. Under George W. Bush, we could, you know, there was no point in trying to raise an issue like greed. But
well, you know, go ahead then.
But now that these both Republicans and Democrats are talking about ethical issues, and you know, and that's the heart of the homeless and the sleeping ban issues.
Yeah, but are the people on the city council talking about the ethical issues? And the answer is no
chance.
Sure,
filter down to the local.
Or is Judge Burdick or any of his colleagues, you know, even considering this? The last time this issue hit the courts was in Santa Cruz locally, was in Judge Tom Kelly's court. We call him Kangaroo Kelly for short. He was faced with a sleepout that went on in front of City Hall, a very public sleepout, for 9 months in 1996 when Rotkin was mayor. And I think Dan Hopkins acquired more tickets than Anna and Miguel.
Yeah.
And he tried not to sleep during the night because he wanted to sleep during the day to show he could follow the law. He would try to stay awake all night, which of course is completely preposterous. Do you want homeless people walking around town all night? You know, so they can sleep during the day. I mean, I suppose that was what we could do. We could have mass sleepouts in the park as a sort of a protest response to this. But the idea of, you know, destroying people's opportunity to work, their opportunity to get social services during the day, their opportunity to get meals, because that's where all these things happen during the day, because they have to sleep during the day in order to not break the law, the Santa Cruz sleeping ban, Municipal Code 6.36010A, which says you have to sleep only during the day and not at night, is obviously ridiculous. But if you go to the Sentinel website, you'll get something like this, Ed. This is the kind of thing that I think Judge Burdick may be responding to. There is a difference between your common downtown shopper sitting down and these two idiots, he's referring to Anna and Miguel.
This is the paper you're
quoting
from?
This is the Sentinel Forum, which has 140 or so comments.
Okay.
By pretty harsh, nasty comments.
Okay.
Who lay around all day. They hang out all day. They beg for money. They give you a snide comment when you turn them down for not handing them some cash or your leftovers. They're an eyesore, and they're driving people away from downtown. That's a problem. Now, of course, you know, if you want to be an attorney, you would say, what does that have to do with sleeping at night? I mean, you know, I guess they would say, well, if you cut them off from sleeping at night, they'll have to either be in jail or driven away from the community, so you solve that problem.
Well, one thing that I'd like to point out here that I've, you know, come to learn very recently, as I said, I'm kind of new to this debate, is the incredible amount of hostility that people have towards idleness, what they perceive as idleness, and what they perceive as, you know, homelessness. And it's almost shocking reading some of these things. I was being educated today that the police used to have what was called Code Blue, where they would just take homeless people out and just beat the hell out of them.
Late 70s, yeah.
And so that turned into a more compassionate, get them a bus ticket out of town. And this new idea, which is just throw them in jail, seems so short-sighted. I mean, first of all, the jails are horribly overcrowded in Santa Cruz County. But beyond that, I mean, just the fact that people seem to be so hostile to the appearance that there is decay in our society, and instead of addressing the core issues that lead to that decay, they just want it scrubbed from their sight, and that becomes a problem when it involves hurting people, like jailing them where you can't get
your services, your social services, when you've been put in jail?
Well, you get three hots or three bologna sandwiches and a cot, you know. Here's another example. 60 unpaid citations, writes a guy who calls herself or himself Christ Puncher. 60 unpaid citations, that's quite a nuisance. The trolls need to get the boot. They're like dirty, rotten, lazy, drunken, drugged out roommates. They need to be evicted. Another one, Downtown Went Down, writes, all these people screaming about the rights of the homeless are in a dream world. I won't even take my child downtown because of how bad it has become. Though there are some are peaceful, the many I have encountered are pushy, and aside from the mentally disturbed, are plain lazy.
Well, we're hoping to elevate the discourse above this sort of, you know.
Oh, your name, by the way, is mentioned in this. You get.
Oh, great. I hope you don't read that one.
They're demanding that you open up your house to these folks because you're causing public expense by even taking this case on, because these people need to be kicked out and jailed. Let me ask you, how much does a case like this cost the city? Do you have any estimates of how much it might actually cost?
I can tell you how much I make from it, but I can't tell you how much the
city attorney, a couple hundred dollars an hour at least.
They're billing their hours. I mean, there's no question about that. I wouldn't, you know, the city, they're having demands made of them. I think that what needs to happen is that there needs to be a public forum that is constructive, not just people screaming at their newspaper, but a public forum that's constructive, that is put together to resolve this issue, because this isn't the type of issue that you can just throw a solution at and expect that that's going to solve the problem. It's complicated social values, and you know, people are losing their jobs all the time. You're just going to have more homeless people, and if there's no net for them, then you're going to run out of jail space. An interesting corollary is the whole prison problem in California, and I won't get into that, but basically the federal government just came in and took over all of California's prisons because their solution to social problems was just throw everyone in jail.
And the answer was that you had, what, one death a day or one death a week as a consequence of inadequate medical treatment in the jails. And I guess as recently as a few days ago, judges found that Schwarzenegger's plan, or I guess it was Gavin Newsom's plan to cut off funding, you know, for jails in San Francisco, or to redirect it or something, was just simply not acceptable.
So it might be cruel and unusual punishment to even put somebody in jail.
Probably is, particularly Santa Cruz jails. But, you know, it's the solution you suggest. You know, let's have reasonable minds get together. Let's have merchants who have fears. Let's have residents who had bad experiences. Let's have people who brought their children downtown and they got, you know, some panhandler said, oh, fuck you, you didn't give me any money, or some drunk accosted them. You know, these are things that people remember for a long time. Call the city council and put pressure on the council. In fact, we had a council packed with merchants to pass these ordinances, which, as far as I can see, have no real appreciable effect except to give the police more power to terrorize homeless people, with the notion that in the Giuliani, the former mayor of New York's approach, you can drive them away. Drive them away is the idea. Through fear. Jail them, but drive them away.
It's interesting that you bring him up, because he had a theory, and it was called the broken windows theory.
Right. Actually, that's the Manhattan Institute also has that theory.
And the broken windows theory was basically, if you just made Manhattan look like it wasn't a decrepit place to be, you cleaned up all the windows, you know, used the Rockefeller laws to throw everyone in jail, then it would have this renewal.
And it's sort of the converse of that, which is that once you allow a homeless person is like a broken window, it invites more crime.
There you go.
That's the claim. The problem is, with the idea of a rational approach to all this, that in the only cities that have overturned sleeping bans, perhaps with one or two exceptions, it's only been through legal action. That is to say, it hasn't happened through... there's one exception, Richmond. Richmond City Council put into its law that you shall not arrest a homeless person for sleep crime, or whatever they call their camping law, unless there's no shelter. But that was passed because attorneys went to the Richmond City Council when it was discussing their camping law a year and a half ago under the late Susan Prather, who was a homeless activist, and said, the Jones decision is in effect. Actually, it was 2.5 years ago. You know, you're likely to be sued, and we're likely to win. So, you know, make sure you don't arrest people for sleeping when you have no legal options, other shelter options for them, because they have to sleep at night. It's involuntary. It's like drunkenness. And that's, of course, the Robinson decision that said alcoholism is involuntary. You can't arrest someone for being an alcoholic or a drug addict. You can arrest them for using alcohol or using drugs, but you can't arrest them for a status. And being homeless is a status. Falling asleep at night, though in a certain sense it's an action, in another sense it's an involuntary action, and it's a form of status for all of us. And if you're homeless, it's something you have to do outside, right? Because you usually have no other options.
Well, I know that in the Einhorn case, the court clearly found that sleeping was, you know, an involuntary and necessary human function. I don't think it took a court to determine that. But nonetheless, they did. So we've already come to that point. And then the question is, under what circumstances can these sort of ordinance be used? And that's really, you know, trying to find the balancing point.
Any thoughts, Ed? I don't want to leave you out.
Oh, no, I'm just following along. It's okay,
yeah, just jump in at any point.
Sure.
You know, if this were a rational discussion, which I don't think it is, because if it were, you wouldn't be, this whole process would not have been begun in the first place of a civil injunction. And we should also say that I'm talking here with Jonathan Gettleman. On the line also is Ed Fry. The phone line to call in, should you wish to call in, there is an open line, 427-3772. I don't know how much longer Jonathan has. I think he's keeping his whole family locked in the closet outside or something.
I have my my new baby Simone, and my wife Elizabeth are sitting out in the car patiently
waiting. Hope they're not sleeping.
Waiting.
You know, actually they can now. Until 11, they can sleep. That's all right. Well,
I hope not, because I know who gets to pay those citations.
Right. Or yeah, you can do community service provided you
okay.
You pay a fee to do it, and that's of course also right. Going to cost money. But
so
it,
one thought I had, Robert, was
yes.
As I was listening to the letters you were reading from the to the Sentinel about, you know, is that the homeless people are actually doing a great service to the downtown area by keeping the bigots away. You see, men and women say, I would never go downtown with these slobs there, and I would never take my children there. Well, fine, that's good. Stay away. Who wants a bunch of bigots walking around?
Well, you know, I've never thought of that. You know, that's actually an interesting perspective. Of course, the point is that since the bigots are in control, and I talked to a police officer last night, who is telling me that more such ordinances may be on the way, more such powers for the police may be in the offing, and that's one of the reasons that there is going that this officer, who regards himself as a compassionate officer, wants to, for example, remove the drum circle, which is a Wednesday afternoon cultural activity next to the farmers market, which the police have been trying to drive out of town or drive away from the farmers market, though it's been there for 10 years. And they successfully resisted that, but there may be more reactionary stuff in the making, and that's why I think this kind of legal defense that Jonathan, you've stepped up to the plate to look into, and
Mark Briscoe, I would add,
and Mark Briscoe, who's defending
credit.
What Miguel de Leon? Or?
Correct. We're doing it together, but yeah, between the two of us, we're defending both of them.
And Ed, of course, we know you're going to be the lead counsel in ending the sleeping ban, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to help.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, that's promising. You know, I've actually gotten a call from an attorney in San Francisco who went to Fresno and helped win $2.3 million in the so-called Kincaid case, where the homeless were having property stolen from them by the police in a fashion that happens in Santa Cruz under Chief Ranger John Wallace in the Poganip, where he comes in, he posts the camps, and 3 days later he comes and destroys all homeless property, which, of course, violates a number of code sections, not to mention the Fourth Amendment. And there was a $2.3 million surcharge on that kind of behavior in Fresno. If you want to call in, caller 427-3772, try calling again. Yes, Ed, go ahead.
No, I didn't have it. I was just going.
Well, one thing that I would like to mention that's interesting in this just personal story about Anna Richardson and Miguel is that they started out in an RV, but they couldn't afford to park their RV, and they weren't allowed to sleep in their RV, and so their RV got taken away from them. And then they had a bicycle with a trailer, which they kept all their stuff, but when they parked their bicycle, it got detached by the city and thrown in the dump down on river, and then they didn't have bikes. And so now they just have their stuff, and now they're getting cited for just having their stuff with them. And it just, you know, I mean, it just grinds and grinds. And then what's next? You know, logically jail, I suppose.
We have a caller here. I also want to say that of these citations, some of which mention washing in the fountain, which means washing your hands in the fountain once, are mostly for sleeping, though. The ones that they're being accused
90%.
Of sleeping. We have a caller. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi. I have a question for the attorney.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm interested in what you think is going on with the city, why they've chosen this path of a civil injunction. Why don't they just simply use the criminal law as it is with this particular couple and their series of infractions? To what end?
That's an interesting question I'm trying to figure out myself. I think that to one extent, it's another tool in the toolbox. But to another extent, when civil courts exercise their equitable powers over somebody and issue a court order, particularly in the form of an injunction, they have almost a limitless number of ways that they can make sure that their order gets enforced. So basically, violating a court order is a criminal offense, it's a misdemeanor, and they can be immediately arrested and thrown in jail and made to answer in that manner. But funny enough, they can also do that for the citations if people don't respond to them, and criminal courts do have the power to issue stay-away orders, so it's not completely clear to me.
I'm reminded of the case of Jerry Henry at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, where the county got a civil injunction against him as a public nuisance, and that seemed to be a case where, and it was, by the way, attorney George Kovacevic, who was one of the lead attorneys on that particular case.
Thanks. I'll look that up.
Yeah, Kovacevic is one of the city attorneys now. He was then a private attorney, I believe.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, so he brought forward that case, and Jerry was able to fight off most of the charges. I think he had to plea on one.
And that had to do, for those who don't know, with essentially driving homeless people away from gathering at the Rancho Del Mar shopping center in an area that was traditionally not just homeless people, but young people. And Jerry was a kind of an elder who was there who advised them of their rights, and the police didn't like that.
And wasn't committing any crimes there.
Right.
They were sitting. A series of events and interactions between mostly merchants who didn't want him there. My question is, what's to stop... all of those merchants could use the courts to file a civil injunction against someone who's harassing them or causing a problem to their business. They have that authority to do that or that recourse. But in this case, isn't it the city that's coming into the rescue and doing all their legal work for them, filing this civil injunction for them on their behalf? And at city expense, and my phone is running out of battery.
Most of the time, my understanding is for public nuisances as opposed to private nuisance, which is what they're bringing this under. It's typically some government authority that is prosecuting those.
Is there anything else, caller, that you want?
I have to hang up. My phone is running out of battery.
Listen to us on
is
the
that,
radio.
Is that right, Ed? Pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, as a practical matter, it would be probably really difficult for a private business person to bring an action for an injunction against, because they have no way of forcing the homeless person to even identify themselves, so they wouldn't even know how to sue them or how.
Well,
to
I think private businesses did sue Jerry Henry, Gottschalk's, and they got stay away orders out there. So I don't know if it's, and I know that Bunny Shoes tried to sue the slow guy, the pink man, the umbrella man, before he was the umbrella man, Robert Steffen was a guy in a bag. He sat in a bag outside Bunny's Shoes running for president in 1999. They didn't like it. They thought he was not a draw for their shoe store. So they tried to get a restraining order. It wasn't the city that did it. It was I could be wrong about it, but I think it was a private agency. But getting back to Becky's, that's our caller. I recognize her voice. It's Becky Johnson. She's a writer on homeless issues for a long time and has her own website now, I think, on these issues. She's also a punching bag for the Sentinel topic bigots who are spending a lot of time attacking her rather than dealing with this issue. By the way, I've invited them to call in case any of you critics or supporters of the city's injunction want to call in and say, I think it's a good idea, you know, why are you two attorneys, you know, opposing it, then please do, 427-3772. You'll have an opportunity to make your case. I think one of the reasons they're doing the civil injunction is, first of all, these are tickets prior to the current three infractions in your outlaw. So therefore, they can't do it for past tickets. That law was passed recently. That in the future, if you get three infractions that aren't attended to, even if they're sleeping tickets, that becomes a potential misdemeanor.
I think they have that now with both of them. I mean, they cite them so often. I think they have their three
since March 12th. I mean, because that's when the law went into effect. So I mean,
they
don't know.
Sleep every night. They probably could get them if they wanted.
They could get them if they wanted. If they followed them around. The second thing is that in the past, sleeping has been, as I mentioned before, not a misdemeanor but an infraction. The only actual crime in the city code as an infraction that can't be charged as a misdemeanor, specifically because we put it into the code in 1999. We wanted to end the sleeping ban, but instead Catherine Byers, when she was mayor, would only go as far as to say, well, we'll make it a permanent infraction. We got a caller here. Either you're on... Well, you were on the air, but you can call back if you'd like. Go ahead. Jonathan, you look like you're about to say something. I'll stop for a moment. You can actually... I'll give you a word.
I guess I don't have anything else to say. You're very eloquent, and you're saying what needs to be said. I guess my point is that we haven't figured out exactly legally at this point how to articulate exactly what needs to be said to these courts to get them to understand that, you know, in a society, different types of people live there, and we all have to find a way to peacefully coexist. But I think this balancing of interests and harms is very interesting in the civil setting, because in the criminal setting, it never comes to that question. It's just, here's the face of the ordinance. Did you do what they say? So I'm hoping through this process, and I would just put this out there to anybody that's listening, that if you have anything significant to contribute in this manner, then I'd certainly love to hear it. But we are going to have to balance social interests here for the court, and it should be a very interesting discussion as to the values that, you know, we choose to bring forward and how the court will ultimately rule on them.
We have a caller. Let's see if we can actually keep the... I think we have a caller. Caller, are you going to continue to call? It was a one-ring call. I guess they didn't quite make it. And it looks like Jonathan's got to leave pretty soon. I think another reason that the civil injunction was used is because you don't need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a particular crime was committed. All you have to just show is by a preponderance of the evidence that you were telling me on the phone, Jonathan, that there is a, you know, a significant injury to the public interest, so that there's... It should be an irremediable harm if they're going to try to get an injunction.
Let's irreparable, say, yep.
Irreparable harm. Hi, you're on Free Radio with, well, heck. Boy,
somebody gun
you
shy
fickle,
out there.
Fickle callers.
Well, I would just like to say this, Robert. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's certainly been my pleasure. We're going to do what we can to keep Anna and Miguel out of jail. It's certainly...
Well,
you said you need
things from the public. You need declarations about...
Right, so
if... You know, what's that
well,
about?
Well, I guess it's... We at least got Judge Burdick to rule that the city is going to have to prove that Anna and Miguel particularly are causing a public nuisance, not just general homelessness. But if anybody knows the two of them and would like to, you know, give a declaration on their behalf, then feel free to... sign that declaration. You can send it to my office. It's Jonathan Gettleman, that's Gettleman, at 223 River Street, Suite D, Santa Cruz, 95060. And if there's any way we can use it, then we will certainly try to get it in, because I know that they're well known around Pacific Avenue. They're very well liked. There's shop owners that like them and don't think that they're a major nuisance or harming anyone. And the fact of the matter is usually when they're sleeping, there aren't any stores open and there isn't anyone out on the street.
Ah, but they might commit a crime the next day, and you're facilitating that kind of behavior.
Yes, they might.
Yes. You see, you can't be too careful these days. Is there a phone number people should call if they're not very good at writing and they haven't got any postage stamps?
They can call me at 427-2658.
427-2658. So we've been talking with Jonathan Gettleman, who is, how long have you been an attorney, youthful Jonathan?
I've been an attorney for 6 years.
And
not all in California. I'm also an attorney in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so are you you're really a carpetbagger who's coming to town to destroy our city. Is that what's happening here?
I'm bringing down the social order.
Now, I would hope so. The sooner the better. Are you interested in helping? You know, I'm thinking the one thing that can be done independently of this case is a broader lawsuit such as Ed Fry.
Well, let me just say this.
Yes.
I am a new dad working two jobs. And one of them,
I have a third job for you.
And took this one on pro bono. So in terms of, you know, bringing down the entire government establishment and all laws, I think that I'll pass on that for right now.
So you think anybody is actually interested in ending the sleeping ban as through a federal court suit? Is there? Would you be interested in being a part of that if there were a broader coalition of attorneys?
Part, essentially.
Yeah, because I think that that's one way to undercut this whole thing. Otherwise, you'll win this case and they'll go after two other people. And it's going to be somebody else who has a child.
I think they picked the wrong clients for a test case because they expected that they were going to slide it in under the radar and nobody would notice and they'd
have
their
injunction.
That's
the third reason. You don't get an attorney. Of course, you don't get an attorney for an infraction anyway.
You don't get an attorney in a civil case.
Right. You don't get an attorney in a civil case except in your case where you volunteered.
However, if they were brought up on criminal contempt charges or contempt charges in that matter, then they would have.
But by that time, the order would already be in place.
No question about it.
And they would have to make it agree not to sleep at night, because that's a violation of the law in Santa Cruz. Jonathan,
pleasure.
Thank you for being with me on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And for you, phantom caller, if you're going to call in, let's stay on the line, shall we? Ed, do you have any comments yourself?
No. I'm just very much in the spirit of treating people better than we've done before, and there are a lot of legal remedies and legal theories that can be applied to get to those to that end. And I'm interested in doing that. I mean, I think we have to open up the whole conversation, not just locally but nationally. And That's been my hobby horse for the past few years, is to try to get a national conversation going.
Well, the only thing that I've found that's been helpful around that, even, you know, potentially helpful, is the Bringing Home America Act, which was proposed by, I think it was Kucinich in 2005, which allowed for cities to have federal grants cut off if they passed anti-homeless laws or engaged in anti-homeless actions and set up the homeless as a protected class.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't on Obama's agenda, as far as I know. I don't even know if it's on Kucinich's agenda anymore. And while I have got nothing but, you know, admiration for those who expose, criticize, and mobilize local action against federal injustices, as you and I did when we sat in at the offices of Sam Farr against the Bosnian bombing. You may remember that one.
Oh, yes.
It was a
Kosovo. It made me a media star, you know.
Well, there you are. I think it's time for you to repeat your performance, this time about the Afghanistan troop increase, which is, I think, even more deadly and more dangerous that's going on there. And by the way, I've sent a letter to Representative Farr telling him, you know, if you don't sign on to a letter against this, I'm going to just hold my breath until I turn blue. So,
yeah.
But who knows? Maybe we can all do it, and we can all turn blue in Farr's office and mobilize some communities to start, you know, telling the Democrats, we don't care if you're in power and saying nice things about the audacity of hope. When you send more troops in, when you increase the army by 100,000, when you defend 757 military bases around the globe, then
killing,
you know,
women and children with robot gliders and missiles.
Right. When you attack Pakistan and threaten to attack Iran, I should shoot down Iranian drones. It's time for us to say it's Bushism, you know, with a Democratic label. So.
Yeah, with a pretty face.
We have a caller. Maybe he's got a question for us here. Let's see.
Excellent.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Ed and Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is Bernard.
Hey, Bernard.
I wanted to speak to Ed.
Go ahead.
Hi, Bernard.
Hey, how are you, Ed?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. On after April 25th, very close to May, I'm planning to do some civil disobedience. I'm going to break the law, the 1-hour rule on the bench.
Uh-huh.
and I would like you, you know, to counsel me on how I can drag the system out. Just drag it over this case. Would you be open to that?
Well, you know, I was having thoughts as Robert and Jonathan were talking about that part of the law earlier, that where you can only spend 1 hour on a bench, and that one is to me is more ambivalent about that one, because there's only a limited number of benches that could ever be placed out in the public, and for somebody to sit down for 8 hours on a bench deprives others of the chance to sit down and rest for a few minutes, you know. So I have my ambivalent feelings about that particular part of it. I hate the fact that they are trying to put people into such narrow little zones. You can't be more than you have to be more than 14 feet away from any storefront. You have to be more than X number of feet away from every ATM machine, that sort of thing. I mean, it's like they're trying to push people around so much just to make them so frustrated they'll just leave. So that's the part of it that I object to the most. But I'm happy to talk with you some more about it. What about that bench, sitting on a bench for more than an hour, is it that you think?
Well, for one thing, you know, it's breaking up our constitutional right to assemble. However, let me tell you my take on it, okay?
Okay.
My take on it is that most middle-class people would not be able to handle that bench very long, because benches are not made to really make you comfortable. Like, after 15 or 20 minutes on a bench, most people would like to leave because it's just not comfortable. However, poor and homeless people might not have that choice.
Right.
So that's what my take on it is.
You know, it's interesting, the bench situation. I made a Public Records Act request like 6 or 7 years ago when the city was expanding what we call the forbidden zones, where it's illegal to sit, spare change, perform, or table, which is essentially on 90%, 80 to 90% of Pacific Avenue and 100% of all sidewalks next to business districts that aren't Pacific Avenue. Any business, it's amazing. You're not allowed to set up a political table next to the Rio Theater. You're not allowed to do street perform there. You can't sit on any sidewalk because all the sidewalks are 10 feet wide or less, and therefore you have to sit in the gutter if you're going to sit, because there's a 10-foot forbidden zone all along throughout the city. But the fact of the matter is that the benches, there were supposed to be like 50, 60 benches after the earthquake. Maybe it was 47, 48, but there was a significant number of benches that were mandated by Vision Santa Cruz, the rebuilding plan, and half of those benches have been removed, mostly at the behest of merchants, and you can see this happening recently downtown in front of Borders, in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, and other places, where they simply, benches become a place where people congregate. Some sit down, some sit around them. And so the new downtown ordinances not only have removed benches, but they've made it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a bench. So you can only have two or three people sitting on the bench. The rest might normally, say, sit next to the bench on the sidewalk on a sunny day or on a not-so-sunny day if they're homeless, have no legal place to sit unless, of course, they pay to go to the pay cafes or move toward the curb on those fewer spots where it's legal to sit down.
Yeah.
So I respect your motives, Bernard, about this bench sitting thing, and any kind of civil disobedience with respect to these laws, you know, has my admiration, frankly. But there is a protest planned on April 25th, which I invite both you, Ed, and you, Bernard, you know about already, and I guess others in the audience may or may not know about it, where there's going to be a noon rally Saturday in front of, I think it's O'Neill's, and then marches up and down the town, essentially to put pressure on the merchants, who are really, unfortunately, at least the Downtown Association and the Chamber of Commerce, seem to be the agencies that are driving these anti-homeless laws. So,
Yes?
Before I hang up, I just wanted to get your opinion on my take on it.
Okay. I can see that argument. I would consider it as a reasonable argument too. I'm not completely convinced, however, that that it's unreasonable to limit, you know, limit the use of a bench to 1 hour. It, depending on how many people want to use the bench, of course, but there's an awful lot of people downtown. I mean, it seems to me there would be that would set up a competition just among the homeless themselves, because there are so many homeless people who would like it to, you know, a reasonable thing to sit on.
I mean, actually, what you point out is really, and what Bernard, I think, is discussing here is important, too, that, and it hasn't been mentioned, is there's been no finding of people sitting for hours and hours on numerous benches. There's one guy, C.J. Stock, who sat on a bench until they removed the bench about 2 weeks ago. Again, part of their bench removal for homeless folks and gatherings we don't like plan. That was right across the street from the Walnut Cafe on Walnut Street. He would store his stuff there and sit there. And in a way, we can call this the C.J. Stock Memorial Law, although, you know, C.J., I think is now he moved to the bench across the street. Now he's moving every hour from bench to bench. I mean, the problem is the motivation behind this, rather, and the idea of setting up laws that treat people as pariahs and untouchables instead of including them in a dialogue about common problems that the community faces. That's my thought.
You know, I think Robert puts his really point on it. But Ed, you know, why don't you think it over? And after April 15th, I'll make some contact with you. And if you feel okay about it, I'd like you to counsel me on how I can just keep this process going and going.
All right. I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you, Ed. Bye-bye. Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye, Bernard.
Thanks, Bernard. And Bernard, by the way, does show up at the Human Rights Organization meeting every Saturday at 3 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. I think it's 703 Pacific, or is it 903? It's a block from the Saturn Cafe on Pacific Avenue. And we will be doing a cop watch there at 5 o'clock. Actually, a cop watch is being discussed there, and we'll be then moving the cop watch down to the area in front of Borders, where we'll be setting up a table and observing police behavior, because the police, of course, are the front lines for the merchants in essentially creating a hostile atmosphere for poor and homeless people downtown who don't follow the very letter of all these laws and have a pleasant attitude toward the police at the same time. So,
right. Okay, Robert, I'm going to have to run, too. How much longer is your program run?
My program runs for an hour, but, you know, I'd be happy to give you 5 minutes to talk about the original subject you called in on, although it is kind of completely different than the subject that we've been talking about. I am going to be returning to the subject we're talking about as soon as we're finished. So.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't I take that up at a different time, because I'm going to be putting it up on my website, and it's not up there yet, so I'd rather talk about it actually when it's up on the website and people can go right to it and see what I'm really talking about.
Sounds good. I mean, you've got some really radical and interesting ideas about health through the use of sort of, we call it water therapy or...
Underwater therapy. It's what it amounts to actually is self-administered chiropractic. You make your own skeletal adjustments, and you do it so much better than any chiropractor could, because the chiropractor doesn't know where the pain is or what force to use on it, and so on. But underwater, your body completely loosens up. All your joints are loose. The gravity's gone. And so you're able to get right to the pain and get rid of the pain. It's amazing.
And you're talking from personal experience, of course.
I am. I've been doing this for, you know, about 5 years now. And I'm going to turn 70 next month, and I'm feeling better every day instead of a little bit weaker.
Have to jump in the pool with you, Ed.
Okay.
Yeah, next time you go down there, you better give me a call. We'll splash together, man.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do it. Good to talk to you, Robert.
Thank you, Ed.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio. Got about an hour left in the show. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides on 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and we do a show twice weekly. That's me and whoever guests cluster together. We have been talking about the issue of criminalization of the poor in Santa Cruz, where an unusual new approach is being used by city attorneys Barasoni and Barasoni to make it illegal for homeless people to sleep on pain of contempt of court. It's already illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night under infraction law, but of course, hundreds and hundreds of homeless people do it each night because they have no alternative, and police ticket about somewhere between 30 and 60 a month. That was the last report I saw, which some would say, well, that's not very many. That's only, you know, one or two a day. You know, and can't the police use this as a tool for obstreperous homeless people who are doing other things that they can't get them for, or they prefer to maybe use a gentler tool instead of the harsh, a harsher code section? They're kind of gently paddling them on the back. I don't think you want to have a tool to paddle someone on the back with something that they can't avoid doing, sleeping at night. It's just too much of a temptation for abusive police authority. For merchants who somehow feel and residents feel that not only do they own their house and their business, but the surrounding mile and a half around them in terms of community space as well, which they don't. You know, they have a right to be treated properly in it. They have a right to share it. They have a right to be a part of it. They do not have a right to control it. They do not have a right to exclude a whole class of people from it, or a class of people that their police force, which is now becoming more and more of a private security force, they make that course makes those decisions. And if you want to read more about this, go to the Sentinel website and check out City Seeks Injunction Against Homeless Couple. I'm probably going to be writing something about this myself in the near future, too. And I'm going to be playing, hopefully, some interviews on this subject shortly, which I began to play last show. And I've got to kind of dig those out. I was kind of hustling to the studio tonight, and I didn't quite get everything arranged. But I'm going to make a couple of announcements now so that I can kind of catch up with what's going on here. Let's see what we've got here. There may be a phone call shortly from a local poet and activist, Christopher Robin, who had some poetry written by prisoners that he tried to have Xeroxed at a local Xerox place at the corner of, I think it's Laurel and Chestnut Street, near the railroad tracks, and the Xerox folks refused to do so because they didn't like the content of the material. And there's actually a story about this on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which you can read if you want. I also got a report last show from a caller who told me he was homeless for a period of time. He didn't want to talk on the air. He was off air, but he said he ended up developing severe depression with caregivers, which turned into substance abuse. And this started about 2 years ago. Before that, he says he was a business owner and employed about 20 people in San Mateo, California. Or maybe it's 20 years ago. I'm a little bit confused about my notes, but he said he was a business owner. And then he became to Santa Cruz. He said the treatment of people with substance abuse by police and so-called caregivers is so abusive that it makes matters much worse. Then I have a report from Fresno, California, which I'll read in a moment. Looks like we got an incoming caller here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. What's your name, caller? Hello?
Hello, Rob?
Yes, who's this?
Yeah, hey, are you on the air still?
We are all around the air now and still have been and will be until 8 o'clock. What's
okay,
up there,
hey, I just wanted to give you an update on the drum circle. I saw Rob Norse stop by there.
Oh, watch out for that guy.
And he was in disguise with a recorder in hand, and I did notice that he was, you know, doing his, you know, number on a undisclosed individual trying to interview him.
Oh, you
but
mean,
I don't know who that individual was.
I think you're talking
about Rob Norse does.
Yeah, actually, I may get to that if I can ever get there through all these announcements. But yeah, that's me. I'm Rob Norse. And
that was you.
You remember me.
I was the guy that was over there under some trees.
You're drummer Dave,
evil,
and you're a man who
I had the evil sticks in my hand.
And I want to point out that at the drum circle yesterday, for the first time in about 5 months, the city did not put up the green mesh fences around the trees to try to stop drummers from coming in. And I actually talked to Sergeant Michael Harms about that, and he said he was using a new approach to the whole situation, which people can comment on when I've played his interview, if I ever get to it.
Yeah, I'll call back for a little comment. Hey, you have a good show, Rob, and it's good talking to you.
Thank you, Dave.
Great show.
Good to hear you. Bye-bye.
Good to hear you, too. Bye.
Yeah, again, I was going to kind of running through a few notes I have before I turn back to the tapes. Fresno has a very interesting dialogue going on, which I think I'm going to postpone discussion of Fresno and Sacramento, where there are tent cities galore, run by homeless people, and where there have been either lawsuits that have been won by the homeless. I mentioned the Kincaid case in Fresno, $2.3 million, and there's a suit being pressed by Mark Maron, the attorney in Sacramento, and there's a whole settlement being considered there, too, and there are tent cities there, and I guess the Sacramento authorities, the governor, in fact, who's, you know, buildings and offices are in Sacramento, has, you know, they're kicking down money to dump the homeless from their own self-created tent city into the fairgrounds. There's some concern about, you know, this being a FEMA experiment to put everybody into camps using, you know, using the military and its increased ability to be called in so-called emergency situations as the economy tanks and the huge amounts of money are printed to pay for the debt that Obama is creating by throwing money at the banks instead of nationalizing them, which is an interesting situation. It's time for folks to get out on the streets and demand that the government stop essentially looting the rest of us in order to pay for the rich in the hopes that the rich will invest more money and save the country. You know, I'm afraid this approach is a really crazy one, folks, and it'll lead. And there's already, you know, rumblings that China is, as I'm told, is pressing for the world to go off the U.S. dollar standard as a reserve currency, which is going to mean that all your imports are going to cost 3-4 times as much. I don't know how much they're going to be huge. It's not going to be cheap to buy stuff at Walmart made in China anymore. Here we go. We got a call here, and let's see who's calling in. Hi there. You're on Free Radio. Hello?
Oh, hey, Robert. What's up? This is Christopher Robin.
Hey, Christopher. I mentioned that you have had some interesting experiences at your local, what's the name of the store?
Alpha Graphics.
Graphics
they're
in Santa Cruz?
They're a franchise. They're run by a local family, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, down my street. And yeah. I just want to let others know, I mean, I'm not trying to be like a big, like, you know, I do free speech in my own efforts for years, as you do. But I want to let others know that I didn't, you know, if people want to do underground media, not to support them, if I've supported them for so many years, and they just decided not to support me anymore. So.
But by supporting, you don't mean, you know, buy you free meals.
I mean
take your business and copy things. You came to them with a zine which had anarchist stuff in it.
I had
and
about
some...
five prisoner zines. I run a prisoner zine distro from my house, and I had, you know... Usually I don't allow, like, nudity because nudity doesn't go back into prisons, so that wouldn't have worked for the zine. But I did notice that there were a couple of boobs. So maybe they objected to that, maybe they objected to the content, but Rob would not tell me what it was.
So again, what happened was last Sunday you attempted to have some material printed, Xeroxed, as you have for the last so many years,
yeah.
And they told you, no, this material is not acceptable.
They said that their workers, Rob, the owner, said the workers objected to the content. And I said, well, I've been coming here for years, you know. And he didn't tell me what the content was. I showed him two of the issues were just text. They're handwritten because obviously they're made in prison. Two of them were just handwritten with, like, pictures of, like, you know, islands and, like, you know, that sort of thing. Tropical islands and stuff, and just handwritten. And I showed him those. He didn't say anything. It was just like, didn't want my business.
Well, you know, my suggestion to you, because, you know, I've read some dialogue about this on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz
right.
Indie Media, and I suggest you scan in what they what you wanted printed and let the let folks see what it was. I mean, there's some folks who if you had, you know, swastikas gouging
right.
the vaginas of, you know, of
young
Latinas, I don't think that's going to be, you know, acceptable for,
right.
you know, even for the people you associate with,
right.
however much they regard it as, some may regard it as free speech,
right.
Some would regard it as hate speech and so
yeah.
forth. So it would be helpful, I think, for us to see those pictures online.
Well, they can buy them at Streetlight Records for less, you know, $1 or $2.
Right, but
or
I mean,
I can send people copies, but the thing is, there are like five issues. I mean,
well, I'd say put up the most controversial possible items, a page or two online to show people. You know, you can speculate. You can actually go back to the guy again and say, you know, I'm trying to let the community know what's going on here. We've been, you know, business associates for many years, and I don't want to badmouth you. So can you tell me what it was that they didn't like? Because I may want to bring in something else, and maybe if I know, you know, there's something particular you don't like, you know, people who use the word Albanian, then I'll censor the word Albanian from every one of my publications.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't want to censor that word, and I don't want to censor.
No, I understand, but at least you'd understand.
But Rob wouldn't really explain to me, is the thing, as I showed him, and he wouldn't even talk.
Right. Well, then you can say, if you in this situation, you put me in a position where you know I have to, in essence, say that I have to report what you're doing, which is, you know, essentially engaging in a kind of a blanket censorship isn't really the word, because, you know, you can go somewhere else and copy, but still you're refusing to publish something which, and you won't tell me why. So I guess, you know, you can pass that on to the community. You can just say, I'd like to say what it was that you don't want to publish. And if you don't want to say it, I'll mention that instead. And as I said, but you need to show us what it was that you think.
Well, I can scan the covers. I mean,
yeah, scan the covers and scan in those boobs. And that could get me pretty excited.
Actually, I didn't actually mean to put the boobs in, because, like I said, boobs don't go back to prison, because prisoners aren't allowed to see boobs.
I see. So you were the boob for putting in the boobs.
I accidentally put in the boobs. And it was just a small picture, but I actually had to censor it myself.
Well,
because,
I'm shocked.
You know,
shocked.
Well, I deal with prisoners, and they want the zines, and they can't.
Well,
read
it seems
them.
To me, Christopher's could use a few boobs, one way or another.
Well, you know, I use as many.
Or
as
at least
I can.
Pictures of boobs.
But yeah, but those can't actually be in there, and that was my mistake.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that we have to tailor our, you know, our sexual notions to the repressive standards of prison authorities.
My main zine that I do for 8 years, then, baby, I've been bringing that in there, and they do that fine, and, you know, that's not.
Well, bring in a second zine and see if they're still. I mean, you might bring in some, you know, you might try a couple of samples to see what the hell's going on, or you might just say, to hell with this. I'll go to university copy instead. You know,
dialogue, you know, university. The copy is okay, but they kind of I kind of have a lot of photos, so I don't know if the machines are up to it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of. I mean, there's FedEx, but they're expensive and they're corporate
I'm
and all that.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it, but I appreciate you letting me come on the air and stuff and just have a little discussion about it.
Well, aren't you having a reading of poetry tonight at the Sub Rosa Cafe?
I go there sometimes, but I have another thing on Thursday, so. That's run by, I think, West Mode, one of the local artists in Santa Cruz.
That's at Sub Rosa, right?
It's separate, yeah. But we will be starting another venue, and I'll let you know when we do.
Okay, so Sub Rosa is having its thing tonight or not?
Sub Rosa is having its thing, and I think it's at 8 o'clock. And as far as Eric Holden says, it's live, and I've been in there a couple of times. There's a lot of people, and it's a great spot.
And the Sub Rosa is the cafe that's about a block from the Saturn Cafe on the other side of the street, toward the wharf. So check it out. It's on Pacific Avenue, Sub Rosa Cafe.
Yeah, it's a great spot.
Thank you for calling in, Christopher.
Thanks, man.
Bye. Okay, phone lines are open, 427-3772. Again, to sidestep all the stuff from Fresno and Sacramento, which I kind of mentioned briefly, and kind of get to those yummy street interviews, which I really like to play because they really they're the voices from the street that we don't get to hear, and we should, and hopefully we will. There's a campaign against involuntary shock going on, being run by mindfreedom.org. I encourage you to go to mindfreedom.org to check that out. There's a video of a guy, Ray, his mom, and a Mind Freedom volunteer begging to end Ray's forced electroshocks. That's known as ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. Some people recommend it for depression. Others think it really sucks. And again, if you want more information on that, go to Mind Freedom. He's scheduled to be shocked again on April 15th, 2009. Of course, I imagine there are prisoners in Bagram and Guantanamo, or at least in Bagram and other CIA secret centers, Obama's reassurances notwithstanding, who are still facing this kind of stuff, which I think is important. Human salvation lies in the hands of the creatively maladjusted, writes Martin Luther King, according to this. Here's a story called The Big Con on Iraq by Gareth Porter. It's in today's Counterpunch. Despite Obama's promises, combat forces will remain in Iraq. Despite President Barack Obama's statement of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, February 27th, that he had, quote, chosen a timeline that will remove our combat brigades over the next 18 months, a number of brigade combat teams, BCTs, which have been the basic U.S. Army combat unit in Iraq for 6 years, will remain in Iraq after that date under a new non-combat label. A spokesman for Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates, Lieutenant Colonel Patrick S. Ryder, told IPS Tuesday that several advisory and assistance brigades will be a part of a U.S. command in Iraq that will be redesignated as a, quote, transition force headquarters after August 2010. But the advisory and assistance brigades to remain in Iraq after that date will, in fact, be the same as the brigade combat teams, the BCTs, except for the addition of a few dozen officers who would carry out the advice and assistance missions, according to military officials involved in the planning process. Gates has hinted that the withdrawal of combat brigades will be accomplished through an administrative sleight of hand rather than by actually withdrawing all the combat brigade teams. Appearing on Meet the Press March 1st, Gates said the transition force would have a very different kind of mission and the units remaining in Iraq will be characterized differently. They will be called advisory and assistance brigades, said Gates. They won't be called combat brigades. Obama's decision to go along with a military proposal for a transition force of 35,000 to 50,000 troops thus represents a complete abandonment of his own original policy of combat troop withdrawal and an acceptance of what the military wanted all along, the continued presence of several combat brigades in Iraq well beyond mid-2010. And I don't want to lose my way here in this story. National Security Council officials declined to comment on the question of whether combat brigades were actually going to be left in Iraq beyond August 2020 under the policy announced by Obama February 27th. The term that has been used internally within the Army to designate the units that will form a large part of the transition team is not advisory and assistance brigades, but Brigades Enhanced for Stability Operations, or BEASO. Lieutenant Colonel Gary Talman, a spokesman for the Joint Staff, confirmed Monday that BEASO will be the Army unit deployed to Iraq for the purpose of the transition team. Talman said the decision-making process now underway involves CENTCOM and the Army to determine the exact composition of the BEASO. But the U.S. Army has already been developing the outlines of the BEASO for the past few months. The only change to the existing BCT structure that is being planned, the Brigade Combat Transition Teams, is the addition of advisory and assistance skills rather than any reduction of its combat power. The BCT is organized around two or three battalions of motorized infantry, but also includes all the support elements, including its own artillery support, needed to sustain the full spectrum of military operations. These are permanent features of all variants of the BCT, which will not be altered in the new version to be deployed under a transition force, according to the specialists on the BCT. They say the only issue on which the Army is still engaged in discussions with field commanders is what standard augmentation a BCT will need for its new mission. Major Larry Burns of the Army Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, told IPS that Army Chief of Staff General George W. Casey directed the Combined Arms Center, which specializes in Army mission and doctrine, to work on giving the BCTs the capability to carry out a training and advisory assistance mission. The essence of the BEASO variant of the BCTs, according to Burns, is that the military transition teams working directly with Iraqi military units will no longer operate independently, will be integrated into the BCTs. That development would continue a trend already begun in Iraq, in which the BCTs have gradually acquired operational control over the previously independent military transition teams. And a lot of this sounds a little hard to follow, and I apologize for all this rhetoric, but the claim here is that late last year, General David Petraeus, who's the CENTCOM chief, and General Ray Odlerno, the top commander in Iraq, were unhappy with Obama's pledge to withdraw all U.S. combat brigades within 16 months. Military planners hit upon the idea of relabeling them as a way of avoiding
the complete withdrawal in an Obama administration. The New York Times revealed December 4th that Pentagon planners were talking about relabeling of its combat units as training and support units in a December 4th story, but there were no details. Pentagon planners were projecting that as many as 70,000 U.S. troops would be maintained in Iraq for a substantial period of time, even beyond 2011. So, in other words, Obama apparently has signed on to this shit. But, you know, need I say I told you so? I mean, he's always said, you know, he doesn't want a precipitous withdrawal from Iraq. You know, we'll keep staying until everything is hunky-dory. And, of course, the longer we stay, the less hunky-dory things will be. There's an April 21st rally in Sacramento called the Safe Ground Rally. Everyone should have a safe place where they can go at night and sleep without fear. That's why we need a safe ground. Sacramento needs a safe, legalized campground where homeless folks can have clean water, bathrooms, and trash services until our city, county, and state are willing and able to provide adequate shelters and affordable housing for the growing numbers of homeless folks. We need you to join us on April 21st, Tuesday, at 2 p.m. on the Capitol steps for the Safe Ground Rally. So, you know, it's interesting that we talk about the, you know, I've called the vets murderers, and they are. If they're in a foreign country and they're killing people who are fighting for their own independence there, their own freedom from foreign troops. But I do have sympathy for vets who come back and, you know, they have been traumatized and turned into murderers by this training. And they need, you know, to be given a decent kind of, I don't know what you would call it, a drawdown, a aid, assistance, psychological help. You know, suicide rates are really high. And a lot of these folks, or many of them, I don't know the actual stats, but certainly numerous vets who become homeless. There's an estimation that one-third of the homeless population, maybe it's the adult male homeless population nationwide, is vet. So that I don't know. I'm not quite sure how accurate that is. But these issues all link together. And so when, I don't know if Miguel de Leon is a vet or not. I presume he probably isn't, or it would have been mentioned in these stories, but who knows? But certainly vets are getting citations for sleeping outside. And there's no legal place for them to sleep for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. And so for the city to add to its sleeping ban and its new downtown ordinances, throw money at the city attorney so they can get injunctions against people for sleeping and stop them from sleeping in the future because they're not following an absurd law that it's impossible to follow anyway, is something we really need to start raising the roof about. And hopefully that'll be done on April 25th at this protest against the downtown ordinances. And before, come to the Cop Watch on Saturday at 5 o'clock in front of Borders. Come to the Human Rights Organization at 3 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And there are other stories we'll be following on Sunday. Angry Oakland police kill African-American man in haste. That's the one where they fly the flags at half-mast because the four cops who got shot dead by the African-American guy. Former bank robber and parolee who's now accused of being a rapist. They're piling it on, and it could well be true, but there's a lot of hostility toward the police in Oakland, and it doesn't come from the fact that people are crazy or just can't stand blue uniforms. It has to do with what police do in these areas, how they treat people, what their, quote, mission is in Oakland. You know, if people like Oscar Grant get executed and BART police officers get bailed out and they don't get charged, and the people that are with until much later, and the people who help hold down Oscar Grant Jr. don't get charged, and you get protests, properly so and hopefully so. There's all other stories I wanted to bring up. U.S. deems half of Iraqi prisoners dangerous. U.S. still holding 13,000 in Iraq, despite the Status of Forces Agreement between the U.S. and Iraq, which specified that the U.S. would stop holding Iraqi detainees. In spite of this, according to antiwar.org, U.S. forces are still holding over 13,000, according to Brigadier General David Quantock. It is his intention that these detainees are to be freed or charged with some sort of actual crime in an Iraqi court. He told reporters that around half of these detainees were considered dangerous, and they will work with the Iraqi government to build a case against these detainees. The goal seems to be to bring them before a court around the middle of the summer, beginning in September. though the U.S. has roughly halved the number of detainees it is holding, there seems to be no legal basis for them to hold any detainees under the Status of Forces Agreement. The Iraqi government has not publicly complained, however, about the detention. Naturally, the Iraqi government is funded by the U.S. I mean, why would they complain? 25 killed in Iraq funeral bombing attack on Kurdish funeral. There's an increase in violence, string of attacks across Iraq. In case you thought everything was rolling right along, hunky-dory, that was the beginning of the week. Awakening fighters rally against the Maliki government. The Maliki is the guy who's the prime minister of Iraq. Members of Iraq's Awakening Council rallied north of Baghdad today, complaining that the Maliki government had reneged on the promises of employment after being placed under direct Iraqi control. The United States had transferred the vast majority of the militia's forces to the Iraqi government since October. U.S. points to the 100,000-strong militia, the Iraqi Awakening Council, as a model of reconciliation in Iraq. They're Sunnis, unlike the majority Shia government of al-Maliki. They concede only, however, that 5,000 of this 100,000 have actually been given jobs in the security forces, despite Maliki's pledge that they would all get jobs in the police or in other ministries. This is another reminder of the distrust that remains between the Shiite-dominated government and the Sunni militias enlisted by the U.S. to fight against the insurgency. So what you have is, you know, we've heard of how wonderful the surge was in ending violence in Iraq, which it didn't. It lowered it. I mean, the violence lowered for a number of reasons. One of those reasons was, you know, that ethnic cleansing had happened, or religious cleansing. People had separated into different groups. But one main reason was the U.S. was paying a large number of the Sunni militia not to fight, or to fight the al-Qaeda groups, or the groups that were nationalist in revolt against the U.S.-backed government there, many of whom are not al-Qaeda at all, who are simply... they don't like the U.S. and their country doing what they're doing. So, just running through some of those stories. And we talked about Christopher Robin, and you can read about him online. And now let's return to some tape from the streets. This is from Sunday, right after my show. I hit the streets with a tape recorder. You may remember Curtis Relaford, African-American guy who does caravans to New Orleans, and who was slandered by the manager of Starbucks restaurant downtown, or such is my conclusion, although I didn't hear it. That's my understanding based on the witnesses I interviewed. I believe it sounds like slander to me. It wasn't just they called Curtis a panhandler for parking his vehicle in front of their precious store, but it was a big vehicle with a big sign on it, you know, support the Follow Your Heart Foundation, which takes goods down to New Orleans to help out poor people. But they actually filed a false police report that he was wandering through the store, spare changing people, you know, and disrupting business, which the police refused to credit, because if they had, they would have given him a ticket. They didn't. But Curtis then took it to court, and Jim King, the attorney, bungled the whole thing, it sounds like, although it's hard to do in court anyway to win a slander case, and expensive. Anyway, Curtis wanted to bring the issue directly to the community. He set up some large signs and a loudspeaker last Sunday in front of Jamba Juice down near the post office. At the same time, interestingly enough, as there were 100 to 200 people across the street eating food and listening to sermons from... Pastor Dennis Adams, who has been driven away from various places by merchants and police for feeding the homeless, but he has been able to find a fairly secure spot at the town clock when it's not raining. And when it is, he violates the law by going into a parking garage where it's illegal to do anything other than park and retrieve your vehicle, thanks to ex-mayor Ryan Coonerty's parking lot panic law. Anyway, here's some tape from that. It's kind of a depressing situation because Curtis essentially was running around trying to deal with a stiff wind, 8 or 10 huge signs, speaker system, and virtually nobody to help him, and nobody seemed too interested in what he was saying. And that was kind of sad to hear, although we did get some of the story out on free radio, and I'm glad that happened. And here's some tape from that day.
Hey, anonymous person, since you don't wish to be public, we have a suggestion that folks keep an eye on realtors' foreclosures in Santa Cruz and become kind of caretakers of the property, because the realtors don't want the property taken away, but they don't want it to trash, so it could be an opportunity to occupy a property and use it for shelter. Is that
that's a great idea. How did you ever come up with that?
This weird guy with the glasses came up and told me this stuff. He's a photographer.
You know, I really believe that idea can work, because realtors are concerned about the safety of their property, as well as they might be concerned about helping out some Vietnam vets or other people that are reputable and that are able to be trusted, and put these people in these units, and then that way we solve two problems at once.
I like the idea. Now, of course, you're just going to get anybody behind it to do something about it. That's, you know,
bring it up with your constituents. I think you'll get a lot of support.
I hope so. I mean, if I have any constituents, but we'll see, hopefully.
Nothing more to add to that.
Thank you. We're out here at the Dennis Adams feed and clothing activity. Looks like a pretty big crowd. I took another video of it. You just heard an anonymous, a long-timer around town who juggles, who writes, who photographs, really quite a man of many talents. There's a long line for food here. People have set up tables. Dennis Adams has set up tables. And there's also several tables with clothing that's been given away, shoes and so forth. The sun is out, but it's really strange weather. It rains one minute, it suns the next, and the wind is probably blowing away my voice. Across the street, Curtis Relaford is also showing up, supporting, looking for support for...
And it's really hard to hear this, and the reason for that is, of course, that I think the batteries were dying in the tape recorder. So I'm going to spin ahead a bit so we can actually get to a place where batteries were replaced, which was soon after this. And while I'm doing that, let's hear a little bit of music.
And children played in the playground, swinging on swings, didn't hear the sound of the single plane that flew overhead. The third shift workers were just going to bed. A flash of light and a rumbling noise, gone in an instant. Parents, girls, and boys, 10,000 mothers were boiling rice, 1,000 prisoners of war. Hoping they'd survive this terrible storm, when each young man in his uniform vanished in the air in the blink of an eye. One moment they lived.
Yeah, that was a segment of a song from Rovix's album Return, David Rovix, Hiroshima. That's, you know, where the U.S. Wiped out an entire city with a snap of the fingers. The only power to have used the atom bomb. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsize. The phone number to call in if you have any reports from the street or comments, 427-3772. If you want to reach me off air, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. There's a new blog up. It's a Copwatch blog. It's just begun. I posted the first entry on the Copwatch blog. If you want to check it out, and let's see if it's actually have a way of pointing you to it. It's pretty primitive at the moment. It just has some suggestions. We're trying to. It's santacruzcopwatch.blogspot.com. santacruzcopwatch.blogspot.com. And as I said, there's going to be another Copwatch, which is a videotaping police downtown. sampling opinion from the community, essentially taking reports of harassment where that's happened, with an eye to both restraining police misconduct and documenting the kind of unconstitutional, illegal collusion between merchants, city government, and the police department in driving away a whole class of people who are poor downtown through such things as this injunction against Miguel de Leon and Anna Richardson, which attorney Jonathan Gettleman talked about earlier and Ed Fry discussed. So I'm going to return now, though, to the last Sunday's. Here's a sermon by Pastor Dennis Adams, just a snatch of it. I don't think much of Christian sermons, I got to tell you, even if I like the people who give them. I'm not a Christian. I'm an antitheist. That's kind of one step beyond atheism. I don't believe, don't just deny there's a grandpa in the sky, but I also feel that this is a delusion that tends to incite human beings against each other, maintains hierarchical structures, authoritarian structures that do evil to people, create wars, mystify otherwise sensible things, are anti-sexual, you name it. I haven't got a lot to say about, much to say about theism. Though I'm sure there's some, you know, some theism is not a bad idea. I have a sympathy for animism, you know, the belief that the world is alive and the universe is a living, you know, pulsating body and, you know, we all come from this and go back into it and all that sort of thing. So maybe you might call me something less than an antitheist. But the certainly current Christian, Islamic, Judaic, you know, stuff, I just not my cup of tea for sure. Anyway, it is some people's basis for engaging in real charity and for standing up for the rights of poor people. And that's the case of Pastor Dennis Adams, who has a feeding program where he feeds people every Sunday. Pretty good food, actually. Last Sunday, Joe Schultz contributed to it. I got some of his soup down there when we were feeding in the rain illegally in the parking garage structure. And the police, to their credit, did not attempt to enforce the inappropriate laws that the city passed, mainly because they would look like complete idiots by doing so. And again, there was a large crowd. That's the reason why the drum circle survives, because there's a large crowd there that will, in essence, create friction. I'm sure that Sergeant Harms would drive away everybody from there and if he could, at least in terms of the drum circle. He calls it a drug problem. He calls it a traffic problem. He calls it all kinds of problems, but I call it a culture war, and that's what it looks like to me. In any case, Dennis Adams is a great pastor. He's been feeding people for a long time, and here's a little bit of his sermon. Again, the batteries on the machine were coming down, but Dennis has got such a strong voice that he gave some life to the weak batteries. So let's hear what he had to say.
That's a good thing.
Amen.
What do you think about that? If you pay attention, you'd probably say amen, because we're not being hassled. We're here.
Amen. Hallelujah.
And I think it's a good thing. We've got plenty of food, so don't worry about it. You're not going to eat or eat. You will eat.
And it's now about 2:30 at the town clock. Across the street, there's a whole setup by Curtis Relliford, who is going to New Orleans and back, just giving out supplies. He's got American flags up, big signs of peace, describing his Follow Your Heart Foundation. And over here at the town clock, we have a famous couple that are being interviewed by Becky Johnson, and we're in the front pages of yesterday's Sentinel, Miguel de Leon and Anna Richardson.
I'm going to interrupt this. It's interesting. All these kind of currents were coming together. We had Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, who are the subject of this injunction, which the attorneys were talking about earlier. Also on the line with us is local big drum guy, Brent. I'm going to call you Big Drum Brent, perhaps?
Sure.
And Brent, I know that you have been a supporter of the Drum Circle, a supporter of street performers downtown, but you've been seen palling it up with Sergeant Michael Harms. Now, what does this mean? Are you planning to join the police force?
I'm easily charmed, I got to say.
You're a charming guy.
He's quite a flirt.
Sexual thing here, Brent.
He is a man about town, right? He's downtown and spends quite a bit of time almost seemingly looking after, but, you know, kind of, you know, spending, I don't know if he's doing it these days, but last month he's spending quite a bit of time downtown, and they even wrote him up in the Good Times, a really glowing front page article.
What a surprise.
And I'm downtown a lot. And
I got a write-up, you know, in the Metro yesterday.
I forgot to look for that.
Yeah, I was best villain of the year, so.
I have to commend you on that. Congratulations. I mean,
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I guess in a town where, you know, villainy is the big deal. I mean, you got the villains on the city council. I can't really claim to be the best villain. I mean, you know, Cynthia Matthews is working hard. Ryan Coonerty, Mike Rotkin, all these people have, you know, who are colluding with this attempt to criminalize poor people and drive street performers and everybody else out of town, though
right.
They say they aren't, of
right.
course.
Right, and you're the villain.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's
like, of course, it's an interesting black is white is black stuff, but that's standard, that's what happens, you know, where they try to do that sort of thing. But anyway, I know that you have been meeting with not only Sergeant Harms, but you've been meeting with Chip, our little downtown executive director, who once was an artist but then became a sort of a front man for the bigots who've passed these laws that criminalize poor people even more harshly.
That's right.
And you've also been meeting with Don Lane, who is a mayor. And to his credit, he has met with some of us homeless activists, but then went along with the gang in pushing for the Forbidden Zone laws and the three infractions and your outlaws and the 1 hour on a bench, we mark your shoe and we come around and give you a ticket if you're still there laws.
I wonder if he's got like the new guy syndrome where he just kind of has to like.
He's not the new guy. He's been around for 20 years.
Oh, he's recently recently back on.
He's recently back,
council.
But he's been on the board of the Homeless Service Center for I don't know how many years.
The faces have changed, though. You know, I don't think any of them are the same unless Catherine Byers was there.
Yeah, Catherine Byers is also. Byers and Lane were both there in the past. And
yeah.
We used to regard them as being the sort of the liberal edge. But, you know, I found it's really increasingly true that liberals are worse than conservatives because conservatives will honestly stab you in the back and tell you they're doing so, but the liberals will smile and talk about civil liberties as they do. You know?
Well, like you mentioned, though, he had a sit-down. I put it out there to Chip and also to Sergeant Harms that in this new era of Obamaism where we're trying to make some, maybe some compromises, but trying to make trying to get some things accomplished and actually try to sit down and hear one another. Let's see what can be done. Normally, I'm always rallying and railing against. I just kind of wanted to try to learn how to work with.
So
a
you went
bit.
And sat down with Chip and Don Lane.
I did.
And how long did you guys chat?
About an hour, a little more than an hour.
And what did they want out of it, and what did you want out of it, and what
we
came
were,
out of it?
Chip asked the question initially, how do we attract a better quality performance group downtown? Now, that's kind of a loaded question in a lot of ways, and so we talked about all the ways that we thought it was loaded. But first, I appreciated that Don Lane wanted to sit down and learn about some of these. He actually, you know, there was going to be two people representing street performers. I invited Jay. I think you know Jay.
Jay's a great musician.
Great musician and a great guy downtown. Also knows lots of people and, you know, is always networking. But he just stopped in for a minute. What I'd done the previous day was did a lot of interviews with street musicians and then performers who I know who say they would never go downtown for a number of reasons.
How many of those people did you actually talk to?
I talked to over 20 people.
And how many of them said they would not go downtown?
Most of them expressed why they have an act that they would like to bring downtown. They've always fancied themselves, you know, like somebody who would like to be a performer. But they don't. The number one reason you'll never see them is because they don't want to be associated with panhandlers. That's kind of like...
So the reason is not that they're afraid the police are going to use bizarre laws to harass them, but they're afraid that, that they will be considered to be part of the riffraff.
Correct. So
oh,
that's
boy.
So interviewing the street musicians, their number one complaint was harassment of the police department and the, some of the stores down there.
Did those street performers say that they, too, were concerned about being identified with the riffraff?
Yeah, they actually did. You'd be surprised. I talked to many of them down there, and they all said uniformly, let's get rid of the bums. And they all disagreed on who the bums were. Some of them were actually, you know, pointing the finger at each other. It's that guy over there. And the other one would point back, you know. So there's a perception that some of them, they like to judge the others and say they're just not up to snuff as a performer. They're homeless. They're, it's just begging with the guitar. Things like that. And the other performers are just sick of talking to a police officer every time that they play. So those are the performers. And then the would-be performers are, you know, first of all, I think they just don't have balls. They don't, you know, because it does take kind of a little steel to come down and perform in front of a cast of an audience just walking by endlessly and not paying attention. And then they might get contacted by a police officer. But so one of the main issues we were hoping to look at was how do we separate street performers from panhandlers in terms of the law, in terms of the way the stores and the police officers interact with them, and in terms of public perception in general. So I know that you're a champion of homeless rights and panhandling rights and street performers and this and that. But this specific meeting was about street performers and how to find a way to maybe help their perception downtown. What can we do to dress them up a little bit? And we came up with a number of ideas. The first one, I believe it was Jay's initial idea, would be to reform the Santa Cruz Street Performer Guild, where we can meet together and kind of get some agreement, or just see what we all think together, and maybe try to clean ourselves up a little bit as a group. Maybe we can.
Let me interrupt you here.
What's that?
You're beginning to piss me off here.
I know. That's going to happen.
Of course. I think it's really important you give your report.
Okay.
In fact, why don't you finish your report, and then I'll
okay.
attack you savagely.
Okay, yes, please. But the main, most important thing would be to gain some collective power instead of individuals who are constantly getting bombarded by the police department. How about we get some collective power so we can actually go as a collective, maybe represented by a small body, but go to the police department and say, hey, these are the laws, and this is how we see them being enforced, and maybe kind of get a little reprieve, get kind of a little. It would be cool if we can find a way that to have the police department and the all the shops downtown and the city council all agree that a good street performer community is healthy for downtown. It brings people to downtown, and so we're trying to maybe work on that image a little bit, and so. That's the main thing.
Uh-huh. This was you, Don Lane, Chip, and for a moment, Jay?
Yeah, correct.
Right. Well, you and I and Sergeant Harms talked about some of these issues last night at the corner of Laurel and Pacific.
Just before you jump started his car.
Just before I jump started his car, I'll jump start anybody's car. I don't care if they're a police officer. I guess that shows
the
I'm
police car.
I may be an idiot and empowering the police department.
It was a perfect crowning moment for
right.
the conversation.
You took a picture of it. And Sergeant Harms actually, before the show, pulled up today and said, thank you very much. And I said, sure. And I want to give a second shout-out to Sergeant Harms for standing up for the rights of Alice and Lather vis-a-vis the Hoffman's and Hoffman's restaurant. Alice has a service dog, which actually his service dog has an unusual – dog's name is Buddy. It has an unusual – raison d'être, an unusual purpose, which is it's a dog that enables her to have psychologically some kind of social contact with the community because people see her dog, they talk to her about her dog, and she otherwise is very isolated. And so she's explained to me that she has that kind of a psychological disability. She's gotten it for that reason. And I think some employee of Hoffman's, or possibly the owner, don't know, wanted to have her, you know, and her dog ticketed for being on the avenue. And Sergeant Harms, this is a secondhand story from Alice, although she should know. Alice reported to me when I was out at Three Trees Lot talking to her and Lather, her partner, that Harms said, no, she is a service dog. She has a right to be there. In fact, if she comes into your restaurant, I'll cite you if you don't serve her.
All right.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's the kind of behavior we need from police officers. And Sergeant Harms has my commendation for that behavior, although I haven't actually written him a letter about that. I probably will, because that's the kind of stuff that I'd like to see police doing, enforcing. It's a rare example of police enforcing the rights of poor people. But, unfortunately, most of what Sergeant Harms does is exactly, it runs in the opposite direction. And you heard me talking about that with Sergeant Harms last night.
Yes.
And you also have heard, probably other people have heard me talking about that issue on free radio. And I don't have much time. Your dentist is going to be pounding on the door very shortly.
Yeah.
He does From the Cream to the Dregs, a three-hour show coming up on free radio, which I encourage people to listen to. But I'd love to have you in the studio on Sunday, Brent. And I just want to say the problem with talking about those bad panhandlers is what the merchants and the police are doing is called divide and conquer. They want to cut you off from other poor people in the community who may not be particularly good performers, but have a perfect right to be downtown. And it's not that they're bad performers that's causing the problem. It's that the merchants want them gone, and at the same time, they can't really justify getting rid of street performers. So they swooped up street performers in the same net, and they're trying to get street performers to be little cops who are going against the panhandlers. Sergeant Harms is trying to get the drummers to do the same thing in the parking lot number 4 to say, well, let's make sure the traffic is cleared, and let's make sure there are no drug deals, and let's make sure this. No. If there are real problems in that parking lot, we can see them from real police stats. And that was never presented to the community, just a lot of, you know, behind the scenes of Sergeant Harms' I know what's going on kind of comments. I sought those public records, and I couldn't get them. And they never made them evident. So
yeah, we hear a lot of hearsay.
So I think it's dangerous. I think you're right. Get solidarity with street performers, but get solidarity with street performers and others on the street. Otherwise, you'll get this elite situation where one group of people gets privileges and everybody else gets shafted. And the street performers will ultimately get shafted too. It's like the AFL and the Knights of Labor. I don't know if you're familiar with the history of labor. They got elite privileges. And it wasn't until, however, there wasn't real change in the labor movement until the CIO and other groups organizing in a mass basis came forward. I've got to go. Maybe I can get you to come in on Sunday.
What time would that be?
How about 9:30 in the morning?
Way too early for me.
How about 10:30 or 11:30 in the morning?
Okay.
Come on in. You know where we are.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
I'll talk to you then.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thanks. That's Brent Adams. And on Sunday morning, I'm also going to be here early at 8:30 talking with Thomas Levitt about the downtown ordinances. We're going to play some more of the discussion between the downtown ordinance folks on the Voices from the Village, which involves Sherry Connable, Ed Fry, Ray Glock-Runeich, and others. I hear a knocking at the door. That means I'm going to have to send this show you-know-where. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadside. Stay tuned for From the Cream to the Dregs. Call me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF between shows, and I will pass on whatever information you have for me. And check out the Human Rights Organization, 3 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe on Pacific Avenue on Saturday, and the Cop Watch, 5 o'clock in front of Borders on Saturday. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides.
Sitting on eggs, beaks in their wings, rest in their legs. 10,000 farmers were looking at their fields, planning the harvest, guessing at yields, dreaming of life after the war. The next second they aren't living no more. Hiroshima. So long, with death everywhere, much more than one person alone can bear. But there wasn't time for a final kiss. Who could have known it would end? Shadows on the street in such a quick burst of incredible heat. Now listen to them talk about doing it again. From whence came the souls of these terrible men? Summertime.
summertime.